Early Sunday morning. How are you doing? Welcome to News 95.7 and talk on the radio. We're going to be hearing about the upcoming Conservative Party leadership. Rob Batherson joining us this hour at 9:45. Carl Nirenberg with rabble.ca at 9:30 to talk about, had Justin Trudeau led a coalition government, he might not be in the same pickle that he's in right now. Also on the show, we're going to chat with Robert Russell. He is involved with a fundraiser for Hope Cottage. They had to postpone it because of COVID-19 this year. That's not an unusual story for anyone, but we'll talk a little bit about what that means and moving forward and learn a bit more about Hope Cottage ourselves. I posted this earlier this morning on our Twitter account, and again, at the S. McLeod Show, if you're interested in following us. Lottery player in Nova Scotia won last night, $17.4 million in Lotto 649's draw. That ticket sold in Victoria County on Cape Breton Island. Could have been a tourist. It's possible. And I asked this question. You just won $17.4 million. So which camp are you in? Tell your friends and family or tell no one and move away. Guess what? Tell no one and move away is winning this morning. Mojolander, what do you think? You win $17 million. Do you tell everybody or you tell no one and go into hiding?
Yeah, I'd be hiding right now.
Good morning. How are you this Sunday? You doing well?
Yeah, nice and awake.
Good to hear. Glad to hear. And thank you for doing this. It's awfully early, even for me. I chatted with you earlier in the week about what we'd be talking about, and it was the Stanley Cup playoffs. Are they more likely to be making money? Is this about market share? But something else happened since then, and I'm sure you're plugged into this. The Quebec Major Junior Hockey League this week, Friday, announced that they are going to go with a season. They're going to have hockey in the Maritimes, in the Quebec Major Junior League, October 1st. But they have decided that Quebec will be behind closed doors, the games in Quebec. And then here in Atlantic Canada, for the rest of the teams, they don't know yet what it's going to look like. But clearly, there will be reduced capacity. What's your thought? You know, here's resumption of professional sports or junior hockey, and now the league says, we'll do it. Is that even financially viable?
No, not really. I mean, there's been a lot of look into the CHL in general, and there's a few teams that can make money profitably. You know, the London Knights are an example. The Calgary Hitmen, they make money. The vast majority of teams don't, and it really is one of those kind of loves of labor that it's something to provide to the community. It's something to give teenage guys a chance to play and to live out their dream and to try and find a way maybe to the NHL. Beyond that, most of those teams are not making money. The fact that they're going to go ahead, the fact that they're going to segregate the league, the fact that they're not operating within a bubble, which seems to be showing some degrees of effectiveness, it's a misguided sort of idea. And to dress it up as, well, you know, young people don't really get this virus anyway, so it's not fair to them, and we're opening up schools anyway, it doesn't sit right.
Mojolander is here with us. He's an economist, a sports economist, Concordia University, Dalhousie University, and he's the guy I lean on to talk about sports with. So when it comes to that discussion, it had to happen that they would have looked to the NHL, who did go to extreme lengths to lock down and to bubble and to make sure that, you know, the players for the most part are protected. But even so, there's still a risk to them. There's still a risk to other professional sports that are doing this. So is it worth the risk is the question.
You know, I guess it's one of those things that after the fact you can play the results and say that, hey, if nothing happened or if only a few games were canceled or if the virus didn't run rampant through locker rooms and things like that, then you can say, yeah, it's worth it. I appreciate that they're focused on the kids rather than, say, the coaching staff, which are maybe more susceptible to getting it or more at risk of getting it, and they seem to be kind of unconcerned about that. But no, you know, it's not even looking to the NHL as the prototype. It's looking to the rest of the CHL brethren. The OHL and the WHL have said that they're not even going to make a go of this until December at the earliest, and they don't seem all that committed. So, you know, I don't see why the Q had to stand alone here and say, yeah, we're barreling ahead, especially when, you know, your news story at the top there talking about this virus is still traveling, and it's traveling in ways that it really shouldn't be. So I just don't get why you would put teenage kids at risk when there's not that much substantial profit and when they're not really being paid. They get a billet and they get their post-secondary tuition covered. Beyond that, they're not being paid salary, so they're not professionals and they don't have an obligation to show.
Training camp opens August 31st. The season scheduled to open October 1st. I spoke with Scott McIntosh with the Mooseheads organization, and he says they're still in discussions with the health department and the provincial government about how to make it happen in a safe way. I did not talk to him about the venue. They are very successful at drawing fans to the Scotiabank Center. But if it is going to be either limited capacity or, let's be honest, no fans in the stands, there's no way that you, for a team that's, you know, relying on that many bums in seats, there's really no way that they're going to accommodate fans to that extent. Likely they're going to have to look at a different venue. What are other CHL teams, are they even talking about, you know, playing in their home arenas?
They are looking at going ahead as if it were a shortened but regular sort of season. So no discussion of bubbles at this point. And, you know, in the WHL, the distances traveled between the various teams is much more substantial. And there's a little bit of a U.S. presence as well with teams south of the border there. Same thing in the OHL. You do have teams on the U.S. side, which is also a very worrying prospect, given that the border is closed. So I don't think that they've really thought through the logistics on their end either, but there's certainly no attempt at a bubble. You know, the benefit to Halifax of possibly being that bubble city is that if you're going to put all of the Atlantic Canada teams in one location, it is the biggest venue. It is a way in which you could possibly bring the parents in, where you're not going to have fans. You could at least have the parents, which is a finite number of people that could be reasonably spread out. So at least they have some interaction with the kids and maybe kind of minimizing any psychological trauma of being locked down for such an extended period. But again, it seems like the queue is standing alone here with a totally different business model.
Mo Gelander on the line with us. The Canadian Pro Soccer League, though, is working on the 2020 season. It's underway now, the Premier League. 8 teams all on Prince Edward Island for a shortened season. Is that as much about keeping the athletes in shape as much as it's about keeping people, you know, perhaps familiar with the teams and excited about Premier League soccer?
I think it's the second one, right? I'm not sure that pro sports are going ahead because they're looking for athletes to have a venue to remain in shape and remain in prime condition. It's an issue of how much money can they generate, or from the other standpoint, it's how can they minimize losses. And in the case of the soccer league, it's still relatively new. It's trying to build a brand, and it runs the risk of kind of where you and I have discussed the CFL before. What happens if you miss out on a season? What happens if you go 18 months between reminding fans that you exist? It could be out of sight, out of mind. And again, hardcore group of fans support that league, and that's great. But if they want to build that into something that's much more sustainable, they need to keep staying in the public consciousness, and they need to take advantage of the fact that, you know, sports are trying to start up, and they need to kind of ride that and see how far they can go with it.
Well, and to that point, in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, the Mooseheads not likely in the playoffs, not likely having a great season this year, and then the season came to a close before playoffs. And I had initially had this question for you, Moja, which was, are the Stanley Cup playoffs more likely to be making money or just keeping market share? And I think you kind of answered that, at least for the Premier Soccer League and maybe the Q League. Is it the same for the NHL? There's TV involved there.
Right, and they have contractual obligations that they have to fulfill, right? There's a certain amount of programming that they have to provide to the networks as part of the TV deal. And so if they can't deliver that requisite number of hours or number of games, then the partners can come back and say, okay, we want to renegotiate or we want some money back. So where the NHL was already suffering from not having the playoffs, at least initially, the thought that they would then have to, over top of that, return money or renegotiate a TV deal was a major impetus for them to say, let's figure out how to make this work and let's push as far ahead as we can and try and at least meet those contractual obligations. So that's part of the driver there. Same thing with the NBA. And it's going to be the same thing with baseball, which seems to be having real fits by not having a bubble. But they're going to keep on pressing on because they have partners that were, in theory, looking to fill up, you know, about 5 months worth of nightly programming that's now being reduced to at best 2 months.
Mo Gelander is a sports economist with Concordia University, also with Dalhousie University. I don't know if you've listened to any baseball on the radio, but it sounds weird without a crowd. It sounds odd. It sounds like somebody's could be making it up as he's going along because there's no way, especially on the radio. I mean, and watching some of the NHL playoffs again, no one in the stands, but they're piping in a bit of background noise there. So it's still a It's weird. Some people are loving it. Some people are just really glad to have sports back, the diehards, the homers, the fans. And maybe others will just say, nah, you know what? I'll wait till until I can get back in an arena, or at least it sounds like a regular thing or sounds like a regular sports contest.
You know, it was kind of worrying that Dr. Tam, two weeks ago, I kind of lose track of time these days. But,
yeah, we all do. We all do.
She said, you know, that, hey, even with a vaccine, we could be easily talking about 2022 and beyond with, like, social distancing requirements and things like that. So, you know, if there was any thought that, say, next fall we'll just kind of continue on as if nothing happened, that seems to be coming from health officials saying don't bet on it. And so while they might have mastered this idea of the bubble, great, but they still haven't mastered the idea of how to put fans in. And even if you're putting 20% capacity, you know, most NHL NBA teams lose money through most of the regular season, and they only kind of hit their, you know, Black Thursday, Black Friday sort of moment in, you know, game 70 and into the playoffs. So if they're now talking about operating at quarter capacity, they're not going to be profitable, save for just the teams that have those diehard fans that buy the merchandise no matter what, and the huge TV deals. They're not going to find a way to be profitable. And so I have a feeling that, you know, next year, if these sports are going to go ahead, it's not going to be in a very conventional sort of way. And I think they're going to look a lot closer at bubbles, and they're going to look at compartmentalizing the season into, say, batches of 10 to 20 games where everybody locks down, we play 10 to 20 games, then we leave for a couple of weeks, and then we try and do it again, only so that people don't go stir crazy. You can see the NBA players are kind of maybe starting to have a little bit of that moment there, in the way that they're being a little bit aggressive on the court more than they might usual, because they're just frustrated that they're locked down.
Yeah, absolutely. Mo Gelander is here with us. And this weird kind of NHL playoff Stanley Cup tournament, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, if you're loving hockey, you're loving it. If you're a Bruins fan, you're loving the fact that they're winning. Moja, you watching any of this hockey?
Yeah, and you know what? I think the last time you and I spoke, you used the idea of getting roped in, and I said, you know, it's a great sort of analogy. I'm not watching it the way I would normally watch a regular postseason, but, you know, my Flames are still kind of bumping around there, and so, you know, I catch a little glimpse here and there, and if there's a five overtime game, maybe I jump in at around, say, the third overtime and watch the last, you know, two periods of hockey. So yeah, I'm watching. I can't say that I'm as committed as I normally would be to watching these things, and it's partly because it's just summertime and my brain, I don't think, is kind of focused towards watching hockey at this point.
Yeah, when it's 35 degrees in the daytime, or 30, well, with the humidity, it's hard to think hockey. But then again, maybe just cool thoughts. Do you know if you're going to be back in class, or are you going to be doing your lectures this fall by teleconference or by remote?
The entire fall semester, pretty much coast to coast, is going to be online. So I'm doing my normal deal in Montreal here online. This summer I did my Dal course entirely online from here in Montreal. Normally I'd be living in Halifax through part of the summer there. And, you know, I can't see any way that you're going to have in-class anywhere for the entirety of the school year. I know that the schools probably want to wait as long as they can before they make that announcement, but, you know, I don't have to tell you in Halifax, in and around Dal and St. Mary's, and even up to the Mount there, how much student housing is built on the idea of, you know, yearly leases, and those leases would have already kicked in by now. And so if you don't have students occupying that housing, you can't ask them to come racing into the country if they're from outside in, say, December, find a way to find a rental place, rent it for 4 months, and then take off. Landlords aren't going to like that. So I have a feeling that It's too disruptive, not just inside the university, but outside the university to make a viable goal of this. So I have a feeling that this is going to continue for at least this year. We'll kind of see, I guess, where we are in the summer.
We very much appreciate you getting up even earlier, considering the time zone. Moshe, thank you for this, and we really do appreciate having your insight. And
anytime. Let's talk soon.
Take care. Bye-bye. Moshe Lander, a university professor of economics who studies and specializes in sports economies, but just an all-around smart feller. Got to say thanks again to him. And just before I leave this, I did have an email from Wayne. We were talking with Paul Wozni last hour, and Paul Wozni brought to the table this conversation about teachers and having, you know, people in front of the classroom who might not have a Bachelor of Education degree. And Wayne says, because, of course, Paul mentioned, well, you wouldn't want somebody working on your teeth who didn't have a degree. Or training as a dentist. And Wayne says, there's a big difference between someone working on your teeth and someone talking to you. Thanks for that, Wayne. I just wanted to pass along I got your email. Thanks. We'll be right back in a few seconds to hear from Robert Russell. And he is involved with a fundraiser as we talk about another postponement. In fact, I don't know where that piece of paper went. I'll find it. They had to cancel it. And we'll tell you a bit more about Hope Cottage when we get back after the break.